Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Relationship Marketing 101. Directions University at directionsu.com delivers passion-powered results for your life and business so that you can live the life of your dreams. Welcome to the show.
Welcome, everyone, to another episode of Relationship Marketing 101 here on Blog Talk Radio. I am your host, Gina Gaudio-Graves, the Dean and Founder of Directions University at directionsu.com. Calling to you live this week from Bonita Springs, Florida, as I do each week on Tuesdays at noon Eastern. We have got a fantastic show lined up for you today. We have my friend and co-host, Fonda Del Baccio, the story lady herself from ProfitableStorytelling.com, calling in today from the Ozarks. Hello, Miss Rhonda. Are you there, Miss Rhonda?
Yeah.
Hi,
I am here.
Sorry about that. Didn't get you muted properly.
I think we both were trying to do it at the same time.
Gotta love it.
Yep, absolutely. It's so good to be back, and I was just talking with our good friend Ben Mack moments ago.
Nice. Well, we have the show that we promised you guys last week on for today.
Yes. We're very excited about that, and this is all about, it's a great time of the year to be focusing on how to make things bigger and more effective, right, Gina?
It really is.
And that is exactly what we're talking about with the show that we did last week and actually being able to deliver fully on the promise this week in having Simon Mannering of WeFirstBranding.com and the best-selling author of We First, who is showing business owners how to make things much bigger by connecting with their charitable organizations and doing all kinds of good work while they're running a business. Very, very exciting social entrepreneurship and social branding that he teaches. And then we have Dr. Serena Reap. And she is writing a book, and has actually, the book is written, but she's doing a book launch in January of 2013. And so what we're doing is having Simon help her make her book a bestseller, make her book big and very effective in the way that she connects it with her charitable cause.
And do I have you unmuted, Serena?
Yes.
Good. Well, welcome back, Serena, and welcome, Simon.
Thank you so much, and Serena, it's so nice to meet you, and happy Thanksgiving to everyone. I was away during Thanksgiving, but just sending that out to everyone, so I hope everyone had a great weekend with their families.
Happy Thanksgiving, too.
So, Serena, for Simon's benefit, I know last week you shared with our listeners a little bit about what you're doing with your book and your business. But I think Simon missed out on that. So can we have you get started with that first?
Sure. Let me start with my mission, my vision for what I'm trying to do here, and then we'll look at how the book kind of fits into that in a small way.
My mission
is really to create a community of customers and friends and family, thinking of it that way, who want to live more meaningful and purposeful lives, while at the same time fostering and promoting a more enlightened and peaceful world. So I want to use the individual's need to create meaningful and purposeful lives and connect that with the larger cause of creating a better world.
Right.
That's the overarching framework, the vision that I've started this business with. More specifically, my book, the title is Work-Life Balance is Dead. And the subtitle, which is more instructive of what I'm proposing, what I'm posturing, is that it's your GPS for an authentic life.
Right.
The book is basically trying to dismantle, so to speak, the myth of the traditional concept of work-life balance. That's why I called it Work-Life Balance is Dead.
Mm-hmm.
When people look at different pieces of their life as like pieces of a jigsaw puzzle that need to come together, they kind of miss something that's very core, that is important, and that is, why in the world are you putting these pieces together? What's the point of the puzzle? What's the point of these? What shape is it trying to create? So we try to tell people, oh, you don't have a balanced life, or you don't live a balanced life, without understanding what is balance for them. Why do they need to have the balance? What is it going to accomplish for them? What's the end game? So that's where I'm coming from. That's what I'm trying to attack.
Right. Right. And, I mean, if I may, I mean, there's a couple of ways I'd love to talk through this, Serena. And firstly, thank you for sharing this, and also thank you for sort of committing yourself to that that cause, because it's really important, both in the sense of the contribution that other people can make to the lives of others, but also, you know, in how you can enrich people's individual lives, because I think a lot of people like myself spent many years chasing things that didn't give them fulfillment, and they always wonder what's missing. So I think this is an absolutely critical reframing of thinking. So let's think about this for a second, Gina. I can go through this in a structured way, starting at from what I've been told, and work through the brand piece by piece in line with, you know, the thinking and sort of blueprint that I have in mind. Would that suit you best? Would that suit listeners best?
I think that would be great.
Yes, please.
I mean, and so, Serena, I know the call is being recorded, so but please interrupt with any fire away with any questions, and interrupt me if I'm sort of rabbiting on too much. But the first issue to address is the marketplace itself, and there's one important shift that has gone on, and that shift is that your potential community of customers and friends and family are now very, very social in nature. Obviously, they've already been social in real life, but now technology is enabling them to be very, very social through their smartphones and online. Why is that important? It's important because the emphasis of any brand now needs to shift away from itself to actually its community. Now, that may seem self-evident, but if you think about it, a lot of the big brands out there don't talk that way, and a lot of small brands don't talk that way. For example, someone, Coca-Cola may say Coke is it, or a author speaker might say it's all about them. For example, I don't know, it's all about Dr. Phil, or it's all about, you know, an individual out there. Instead, I think what you're doing is the right thing, which is turning that inside out and serving as sort of the celebrant of your customer community, and reframing your message about what is the value of what you're offering to them. So it's not about, you know, I know that you at one point were thinking about Serena Says as a line. I think that's too self-directed, and I think it's far more valuable to turn it inside out and build it around something that's community-facing, because technology has made their customers very social in nature, and, you know, which builds on the, you know, the way that they're innately social in the real world. And then the second thing I'd say is that I think the days, and this is a very important thing for everybody listening, because I know there's a lot of people who are in this space as well on this call, and I'm in exactly the same boat, author, speaker, trainer. We're all faced with a choice. Do we make ourselves a celebrity brand and sort of feed into that model that's out there, which is, you know, you're the New York Times best-selling author, et cetera, et cetera, or, and, you know, you build the brand around yourself, or do you actually build a community around a larger vision or idea? And I've had this discussion many, many times, but as a function of the nature of the marketplace out there, which I just touched on, which is very social, very connected, very media savvy, very distrustful of brands, it's critical to recognize that you now need to be community facing, and that's why you see big companies like, you know, Coca-Cola saying it's now about open happiness as opposed to it's the real thing. Or you see brands like Pepsi say that it's refresh everything and asking us what ideas we'd like to see to make the world a better place, and they're going to fund those ideas. That's why they're shifting, because that's what the community demands. So given the choice between Serena Says and this sort of work-life balance proposition, the latter is far, far preferable. And just listening to you, when you then move on from the nature of the marketplace to brand definition, I'm going to ask you a question, Serena, because there's two ideas here. One is this idea of balance, and the other is this component of purpose. And I'd love you to explain to me a little bit how the two work together, because one of the challenges is not just to name a topic or subject that is the, you know, focus of your brand, but to be really specific about that so that you're different to anybody else in the space. So talk to me about the relationship between purpose and balance for a second.
Well, the way that I can explain that is using this concept of three M's that I have in my book. I use the examples of Martin Luther King, Mother Teresa, and Mahatma Gandhi. And I say, and this kind of encapsulates my thesis, and that will get to what we're just talking about. You know, most people would say these three people, I just picked the three of them, we could pick any of them, they just all happen to have M in their names, which made it easier for me to talk about them. But the point is that all of these people, by traditional definition of work-life balance, are the most imbalanced people in the world, because they just did one thing, and they had, you know, I mean, imagine the idiocy of thinking and going to Mother Teresa, God bless her soul, she's gone now, but, you know, when she was alive, imagine the idea of going to her and saying, oh, you have such an imbalanced life, you know, you should be taking 2 weeks vacation in the Bahamas, and you should be playing tennis once a week in order for you to be a better person to serve your community. That just, even the concept sounds, you know, really incredibly revolting to us. And why is that? Because they have lived their whole life with this passion, this sense of purpose, and everything they did revolved around that. And that's what made them not only great people, but also the communities that they served, and the ideologies that they proposed, and everything that they touched and changed is a consequence of that passion. And what I'm trying to say is that the way you balance your life is not by taking, you know, 9-to-5 work and after work is from 6 on, or weekends is that, and try to fit them together the way traditionally work-life balance is thought of, but instead have a sense of who you are, what your purpose in life is. And if you don't, we start there to figure out what it is, but at the moment, assuming that you have a sense of who you are, what you want out of your life, where you want to go, how to create meaning in your own life, use that as that central point around which everything about your life revolves. And that is how you end up balancing your life, not the way you put a few pieces together, the way people traditionally talk about balancing is in terms of think 4 or 5 priorities in your life and you know, throw everything else out and create a calendar, put all these dates and times you're going to do this and that and so on. And I find that sorely misses the point of why we need this sense of purpose, sense of meaning in our lives. All these things, we're taking somebody else's definition of what our life ought to look like, how it should be balanced, and trying to apply that to our life, and we're not being successful. There are also technological reasons and other things. I don't want to go into that right this moment, because the issue is, what is the point of having purpose? Why do we want purpose? Why do we want meaning? Without that, everything that we do is meaningless. It falls apart. It's just a piece of, little pieces of the puzzle. And the purpose is what is the glue that puts all that together. That is what I'm trying to say.
I completely agree, and I think there's both research bears it out, and also I think anecdotally, each of us in our lives now are looking for something a little bit more meaningful. I think some of the worst excesses of the run-up to 2008, kind of, you know, the global economic meltdown, made us all feel that we all got our fingers burnt in a sense, and we're all sort of looking for something more meaningful. But this, I agree. So there's two ideas that come to mind here.
And Simon, there's one other piece that Serena needs to explain to you. Serena, how does this tie into cancer and specifically the Susan G. Komen Foundation for you?
Okay. There's an awful lot of research that's compiled by the National Cancer Institute, as well as many, many other reputable organizations that show that chronic stress that comes from living an unbalanced life increases the risk, if it doesn't directly create cancer and heart disease and other chronic illnesses, it dramatically creates an environment in which those risks increase, as well as makes it harder for many of the modalities of therapies employed be less effective. And so if I can contribute toward in decreasing that risk, then I have done a meaningful and purposeful job. So I'm trying to, through my book and through my ideas and through my ways of showing people how to reduce stress by understanding how the balance is created as opposed to what they are doing right now, I'm hopefully giving them an opportunity to reduce that stress. So that is basically the link between what I'm trying to do at the level of my book and the level of my consulting and teaching and coaching to the causes that I'm supporting. I want to be able to create an environment as well as provide funds for other organizations that are also trying to reduce stress and helping people to cope with issues such as cancer. Now, the reason for breast cancer is that women are under much greater stress than men. Not that men aren't, but women are particularly under greater stress due to the fact that they have, at least they feel, greater responsibility toward balancing work and home. You know, men can more easily say, oh, you know, I bring bacon home and then after that I'm done. Not that that's realistic, but more so that with women that need to and feel this tremendous sense of guilt associated with not being the best at both, especially today's women who are educated and see themselves as professional women, and then they come home and they'll still have to do all the traditional things their mothers and grandmothers and great-grandmothers did.
Sure.
So this is creating greater stress, and that's the connection that I see.
No, it all makes sense. And, you know, the wonderful thing is that you have the various parts of the brand puzzle that you need. And what I mean by that is every brand needs a keystone. If you imagine there's an arch at the top of the arch, there's that keystone in the middle that is very simple from which everything hangs. And in my case, it's we first, and you know that may manifest itself as a book or speaking or whatever, but everything goes through that filter of we first. Listening to what you explained, you know, once you move beyond the marketplace and recognizing how you need to structure your brand in a sort of community-facing way, then the issues become brand definition and brand personality. Like, what is your brand and how does it act? And what we just touched on there are two very important parts to that, and two thoughts came to mind with respect to brand definition. And these are two alternatives. You know, as with all marketing, you need to create some simple distillation of your messaging that is, you know, that everybody can understand and they can share with other people, and it kind of it can enter the vernacular of what people talk about. And one thought that came to mind in terms of this keystone or larger idea for your brand is on purpose. And what I mean by that is living your life on purpose. So it's on the subject of purpose, you know, the role of purpose in your life, but also this idea that you have self-determination, that you're going to structure your life around the thing that is truly most meaningful and ultimately preventative in terms of disease, but truly most meaningful, which is, what is your purpose in life? What is the contribution you want to make? What were you here to do? So one idea is this simple distillation all the way down to on purpose, and that is this is that, that's how you express this larger idea of living your life in a self-directed way that is all built around purpose instead of some sort of abstract idea of what we're supposed to do and play tennis and exercise three times a week or whatever it might be. So that's one idea. On the other side of the equation, you know, when you describe the traditional view of work-life balance, you rightly identified that this is something that's sort of prescribed by other people out there, and it's almost like an outside-in approach. And so a thought that came to mind is living inside out. And what I mean by that is you're living inside out because you're living from a place of purpose, but you're also living inside out because you're turning conventional wisdom on its head. You're turning it inside out.
Right.
And so instead of doing what you're told from an outside-in perspective, which is everybody is supposed to have their, you know, meat and two veg every night, and they're supposed to sort of, you know, do this and do that and whatever, according to everybody else, your compass turns inside out, and it comes from your own passion, your sense of purpose. And so you could have this larger idea of living inside out, you know, how to live a life of purpose that, you know, that fulfills, you know, every personal dream, you know, however you want to phrase that language. So
right.
just two suggestions there, one on purpose, so this idea of self-determination and the pivotal role that purpose plays. An alternative is living inside out, which is speaks to living from a place of purpose, but also turning conventional wisdom inside out. And also from a health point of view, there's a slight resonance there that when you live inside out, you're being mindful of your health. And so if that's on the brand definition side, there's a third part which I was talking about, which is brand personality. Like, how do you talk as a brand? And this is where this new marketplace and technology is so important, because people think that smartphones and social media are these new whiz-bang shiny squirrels that we're all supposed to, you know, rush to. They're not really. All they are is new channels through which to connect emotionally with each other. And nothing's changed. It's like television, print, or radio. It's just another channel out there. It just happens to be in the hands of consumers or citizens or customers. And so when you talk about preventable disease, this is very important, because everyone has been touched by cancer somewhere in their immediate family or distant family. Everyone has been touched by, you know, heart disease. And so one of the most powerful ways that you can connect with customers and inspire them to promote your brand through social media is to connect around this idea of contribution to, foundations or nonprofits related to heart disease or cancer, but in a preventative capacity. So you can reach out to people and say, you know, the brand is living inside out, or the brand is on purpose, you know, and its mission is to give people the gift of their own purpose in life so they can reframe their work-life balance, but in so doing, prevent or, you know, avoid very preventable diseases which are sort of exacerbated, especially in women, by an imbalance in the way they, you know, they try and juggle work and home. And so I think when people hear that you are deeply committed to their well-being, not just in a sort of abstract level in terms of finding their passion, but on a physical level as well, and they can relate to somebody else in their family that's been touched by cancer or heart disease, it's a very powerful, motivating thing, because no one wants that for themselves or any of their loved ones. And so if you have a keystone, going back to this original idea in terms of brand definition and brand personality, if the brand is on purpose, or the brand is living inside out, or, you know, there may be another version, if that's the keystone, underneath that you have a book, but that book is a calling card for that larger idea. And then you have seminars, and you have training, and you have programs that people can enroll in that all teach them to, A, identify their purpose, B, structure their lives around that, and C, complement that new structure with healthy life habits that will reinforce this prevention capacity. For example, I don't know, there's things like, you know, rhubarb, and all my brother's an oncologist, and there's lots of things I've heard over the years that are good for these different things. But, you know, taking a healthy lifestyle that will complement the preventative aspect of stress management by living a life of purpose and passion. And then D, maybe 5% of the sales of your book or of your company or of your trainings go towards a non-profit or foundation that improves the lives of those suffering from cancer or heart disease, or maybe it's an education facility that builds preventative awareness and so on. So that when you reach out to people, they not only want a life of purpose for themselves, but they like your brand because it is contributing to something larger than you, and they like the fact that when they buy a book or a training product or a seminar, that it's actually going towards a cause. So, you know, all of those aspects are not just admirable. It's not just sort of a nice pat on the back. These
right.
are the things that are driving the marketplace now. These are the things that customers want. They want a life of meaning, which you're obviously hitting the nail on the head with purpose. And they want to feel like they're working with people that are going to make life better for themselves and others. And, you know, that contribution aspect is there. So, you know, if you think about it, when you look at the new marketplace, you look at defining your brand and distilling it down, and then when you look at the personality of the brand reflected to the contribution it's making, suddenly you can see how these social technologies unlock this emotional connection between people, and then you as a speaker, author, and trainer are not alone. It's not like suddenly you're an entrepreneur or a startup or solopreneur working from your kitchen table or home trying to kind of get some customers. Instead, the first 10, the first 50, the first 100 people that hear about you will be motivated to share what you're doing with somebody else, and suddenly you're just one of a group of 50 or 100 people building your brand, and then everything changes.
Right. In one of my core values that I identified is that philanthropy for my company is not just an adjunct or an afterthought, but instead it's a part and parcel of a reason for existence.
Right.
As well.
Right.
So everything goes through, every single product that I put out is part of that philosophy. So it's not just one time, it's not just one thing or one book, what have you, but everything that I do is going to, I do, we do, the company does, is going to be for a cause. It's not
right.
going to be, and that cause is not going to be making money, even though you have to make money to be able to
yeah.
give money. But the idea that socialpreneurship is superior to entrepreneurship is what I'm trying to communicate through everything that I'm doing.
No, that totally makes sense. And, you know, sometimes people still make the mistake of thinking that this is cause marketing or corporate social responsibility or foundation work or just the good stuff that an entrepreneur can do in addition to their work, in inverted commas.
Correct.
But
yes,
I really want
to... Yeah,
yeah. I really want to make it clear that we live in a very fortunate time where all the research bears out that what customers want is to support brands that are actually doing some good. So we're not talking about the extra good you do after you've made your money or taken some profit.
Right. Yeah.
We are
yeah.
actually saying the future of profit is purpose because
right.
that's what your customers
exactly.
want. So... I think it's a very, very strong position to be in because the big mistake, people don't realize that just because social media and just because smartphones are in everybody's hands doesn't mean they work for you. It absolutely doesn't mean they work for you. And most people try just putting messages out there on a sort of ad hoc basis and more often than not just talk about themselves. And they wonder why it doesn't lead anywhere because they keep hearing that social media makes things explode. But what they don't realize is that what makes them explode is the emotion, the purpose, the passion, the connective tissue between people that runs along these channels, these social media channels and into smartphones. And that's why what you're doing is so important. And I would say, you know, Serena, the next couple of stages in terms of a blueprint for how you work through this, you know, if on a larger company, the next stage would be integration. And by that, I mean, how do you get your employees on board? Because one of the big mistakes that people make is even when they define what their company stands for, they don't fully explain it to their employees or don't empower their employees to talk about the company to customers on the same basis. So what happens is, a company says, hey, we stand for this good cause or good thing, and then a customer says, well, that's great, and then they call up someone from the customer, and they just get a rude, normal person and get no, and there's no sense of that personality of the brand, and then they go, oh, gosh, that, they were just saying that, and they don't really mean it, and they've lost a customer for good. What's more, that customer will say to others, oh, don't bother with them. So
exactly. I have one whole chapter in the book talking about how corporate values and corporate actions would be with their employees or with their customers don't mesh, because you just create, you have this thing about what your vision is, what your goal is, and it's sitting in somebody's desk drawer. Nobody's ever opened it. Nobody's ever communicated to the employees. And even worse, even when they repeat it, they don't actually say how it's implemented, what specific ways in which each individual can contribute toward making that vision of the corporation a reality. So there's a tremendous disconnect between the two.
Absolutely. And, you know, a lot of the people listening to this call are, like me, small companies. You know, there's just two people that work for WeFirst, and many of us are on our own. So the sort of education of employees isn't as acute. But what you do need to know that is, as your company grows, one of the big reasons companies fail when they grow is that they lose, the employees lose touch with the purpose or mission of the company. And, you know, eventually, you know, you've just got a crowd of strangers all sort of walking around together under the same building or logo. But so that integration is absolutely critical. And it's amazing what can happen. You know, we're talking, what we're really talking about here, Serena, is becoming a very effective social brand. And a social brand is nothing more than a company that in its marketing knows how to relate in a very social way with other people through mobile, you know, through gaming, through social media. That's all it is. It, you know, it's not a fancy term. It's just a brand that knows how to be social. So in terms of what we've been talking about in the first four areas here, from the marketplace to the sort of brand definition to its personality, as we saw through its contribution to preventable disease and so on, through to the integration with employees, that's the story of the brand, because every social brand, there's two parts. The first part is the story, and then there's the telling. So if you think about the marketplace, brand definition, brand personality, and brand integration as the story side of it, to get all your ducks in a row so that you really know what the messages you're going out with to market, then there's the telling. And in the first part of the telling would be brand community. Like, how do you actually sort of architect a community that will keep building on it in a self-sustaining way, that will keep propelling your brand forward. And that's where this emotional heart, this on purpose, this living inside out is so important, because there's nothing, I think we've all had those private conversations in life where you get together with a friend or a buddy or something and you say, yeah, I'm a bit disillusioned with work, or I don't know, I just need something else, or I'm not sure what the point of it all is. And this is this, your platform touches that emotion. And if you reach out to somebody and show them how to define their purpose and to reframe their work-life balance around that passion, that purpose, so allowing them to find more meaning and ultimately to do a better job of preventing disease, then that's something they will share with others, because no doubt they know 10 other people who have got similar issues in some way. And so the way you empower your brand, a very, very simple strategy, is simply to say, listen, you know, I'm doing a training course, or I'm doing an online training course, or I'm doing a seminar, or I'm going to do a webinar, you know, and everyone who attends will get, I don't know, a 50% discount on a copy of my book, or a 50% discount on another ticket. And Why do you do that? The reason you do that is they're motivated to do that because they understand that you have their interests at heart, that you're working towards their well-being, and that motivates them to sort of get some sort of social currency or badge value or status by saying to their friend, who they, only they know, say to them, hey, you know how you're a bit frustrated with work and everything else like that? You should check out Serena's course, or, you know, check out a book, and listen, you get 50% off if you order it through me. And here's the thing, you know, I was talking to the global experience director of Facebook not long ago, and he said that consumers are so overwhelmed by the amount of marketing information out there every day that the only way they're making decisions is looking to their friends and peers. You know, gone are the days where you say, I want to go on a holiday to Miami, and you put in holidays Miami. You generally might say on Facebook, hey, anyone, or you'd ask a friend, anyone know a good hotel to stay in Miami? And it's these close, trusted relationships are the most powerful. So if you don't connect with people at a heart level through social media, you'll never unlock the power of it, because they'll never be motivated to open up their closest contacts to you. So when it comes to building your brand community, the contribution you make to preventable diseases like cancer and heart disease, and the way you frame your messaging around living inside out, and how you talk about giving them a full life, that's going to unlock the power of this technology for you and allow you to build a self-sustaining community. Does that make sense?
Yeah, absolutely. I do have a question, though,
yeah,
somewhat related to that. I was going to ask you at a different point, but at least you brought out a couple of little pieces that connect to this. Obviously, you know, you talk about the co-creation of things in your blueprint, and one of the mm-hmm. things that I was looking at is, since I already have my book, how do I, without the benefit of them being part of the co-creation in the book, what do I do now that it's almost there? What, mm-hmm. how can I make that their brand or their idea, and not mine, but not just mine, might be a better way
exactly.
to say it.
Exactly.
Can you help me there?
Yeah, I'm going to give you, I'll talk to you about three stages. The first is, let's assume you don't have a book and you want to co-create the book with your audience, which is one approach. For example, an author called Jeff Jarvis, who wrote a book, Public Parts, which is all about the loss of privacy on the web, he wrote each sort of little section and asked for comments every day in his blog and wrote the book together with his audience. Kevin
right.
Kelly, the founder of Wired magazine, he publishes all his writing as he writes it and puts it out there. And the reason they do that is this. They not only get the real-time feedback, so it makes the manuscript that much stronger, they also, when they've got a strong community, that community is already invested in the result because they've already been part of the process. So that's why you see companies like Levi's crowdsourcing the face of the boy or girl for the brand. Yes, they want their customers' opinion, and they want to show that they're listening to their customers, but they also want their customers to care about the result before we've even got a result. So they're already invested in the process. So that's one. That doesn't apply here, but that's just one of the three alternatives. The second
right.
alternative is where you are now, which is that you've got a book. And what you can do now is a couple of different things. You co-create the marketing or launch of the brand or the book with your community. And there's a couple of different ways you can do that. For example, you can give away a shareable chapter. And this is something I did with the launch of my book, where you take the prologue or chapter one and you get permission from your publisher and you put it out there. And what you do is you put tabs on the side of each page. And, I had a Facebook, Twitter, and there was no Google Plus at that stage, just Facebook and Twitter there. And when you click on that tab, it posts that chapter to that person's Facebook or Twitter page. So simply with a click of a button, you have, take as an example, 10 people click on one of those buttons, then it goes to 10 people's Twitter or Facebook accounts, which is, you know, anywhere upwards of 200, 300, 1,000 people, who knows. So suddenly, potentially, you can reach 10,000 or 20,000 people more. And obviously, you don't get everyone to look at it, but it suddenly becomes sort of innately shareable. So giving away a shareable chapter like that is a powerful way. The second way is to think about a way of launching it that is innately inclusive. And let me explain what I mean. When it came to launching my book, which was about repurposed capitalism, and it's called We First, you know, I had no resources and very little time. It was 20 days before the book was actually launching, and I didn't quite know what to do to get it out there. And in the end, I sat there and I thought, okay, how do I make, what am I trying to do here with this book? I'm trying to change business and make it care more and put kind of new language in the mouth of these business people who are human beings and want to make a difference, but they're caught up in all this business stuff. And so I literally went for that. I said, I want to put new words in their mouth. And so I worked with a poet, and we created a spoken word piece and created a short animated video about the book. And then what I did was I had a chance to do a speech on a stage, and I played that video on the stage, and then everybody in the audience shared that video, and we actually had 38,000 views in the first 2 days, and that propelled the launch of the book, to New York Times and all that sort of stuff, bestseller and things. The point of it is you need to think of a way to share the message of your book that is innately shareable. So it's not about saying, how great is this book? It's about saying, here's the message of the book in a way that's valuable to you that would inspire you to share it with others. Now, so you can do a very literal thing of creating a shareable chapter where somebody gets something for free, or you can create a piece of content around the book. And what I find is that sometimes when we get in our little verticals, we get in our little silos, these little buckets in our head, we go, I am now an author, speaker, trainer. We think that we're limited to what any author, speaker, trainer has done in the past. But the only reason I did a video or an animated video is because I saw Tim Ferriss did a short little video for his book, For Our Body, that came out a little while before. And I thought, yeah, that's a good idea. Like, you should open up your creativity. So if it comes to your book, if your book is called Living Inside Out or On Purpose or whatever it might be, how could you bring that to life in a way that would be shareable? And then very quickly, the third way of doing this is you involve all of the above. And what I mean by that is the three most powerful ways to propel a bestseller that I found from my direct experience was, A, work with influencers. And what I mean by that is that you reach out to those people in your space that have influence, and you build a relationship with them, and they see the purpose and passion behind what you're doing, and then they're willing to write about your book on their larger platform with all their community. And I did that with probably 15 or 20 bloggers wrote about my book when it came out. So I would be cultivating those relationships in the first place by commenting on their writing, reaching out to them, trying to say hi to them at conferences and so on. The second way is to create this, you know, innately shareable piece of content. So influences as a piece of content. And then, you know, the third and probably, I would say, the third most powerful way is to really, in the launch, lead up to the launch of your book, build out your own community. And that you do that in several ways. You know, you have a blog and you write, you know, stuff of quality and content on your blog. You establish a Twitter account, you get out there on Google Plus, and you start to get very active on social media. So you not only plug in that piece of content to your community, you plug it into the influencers community, plus it's innately shareable, so those two groups will then, you know, share it even further, and that's where you get that compounding effect. Does that make sense?
Yeah, absolutely. I have, you know, close to 1,000 people on my Twitter account, and I have, like, close to 5,000 people on my Facebook fan page for the book. And I have, you know, quite a few thousands in the LinkedIn as well. So one of my things is to be able to give the free chapter you're talking about. Fortunately, my introduction chapter is not the way most introductions are. Mine is an overview of the entire book. So it actually is a much better a product to put out. So, but one of the things that Gina and I talked about is that I was going to put that on Amazon as an ebook, just the first chapter, and in it provide links for them to go to the website, to go to, you know, sign in to the Facebook and LinkedIn and so on and so forth, but provide that for a length of period as a free book to be able to get more a list of people. But on the LinkedIn itself, I belong to a group that is specifically interested in work-life balance, and there are about 5,000 members there. So this is the kind of network that I've already created to work with these people that I have already identified as people that are interested in this area. So from that perspective, I've done some work. Now I need to obviously do a whole lot more, you know, to do that. But I took the example. I was very impressed. This is how I found out about you, by the way, two or three years ago or whatever. You, Mike Koenig was showing your videos. The I think it was like 9 or 10 videos that you did talking about me first. It was like an interview situation. And that's how I got introduced to you a few years ago. And I took that model, and right now I'm working on making 20 videos in that interview format that would be put on YouTube and other distributed to other video networks is another strategy that I already have on my list of things to do. Did that give you enough exposure, or is that was that effective or not effective for you?
Well, here's I'll give a couple of things to think about. I think, as people know, the conversion rate on social media, depending on the type of relationship you have with people, can be quite low. If you have a fairly distant relationship with, you know, if you haven't really got a tight relationship with your audience, it can be, you know, low in terms of 2 or 3% of people taking action. So, that you know, it's always important to be realistic about what you can expect. Secondly, the other thing that I realized going through the whole book thing for the first time myself and having no idea, you know, what I was doing and no relationships in the area and so on, was that you have to do all of it well. Every single author that I know that has, you know, launched a bestseller, there's no sort of magic bullet in terms of a strategy, and you have to do a number of different things. So, yes, those videos, that video series is important because it's just one of the many ways that you build an audience by adding value, by giving them something effectively for free. So I think I did.
Right.
I sat down for one night with a friend in a room, and we filmed it. And all we did was write out a series of sort of, you know, 20 questions, and went through and answered each of those questions and carved them out and then put them out there. So, you know, a shareable chapter, a video series, constant blogging. Another important strategy that I would say, and this all goes, going back to the blueprint, this goes back to community building, and this also goes back to sort of like stage 6 in my mind, which is brand communication, which, you know, is how do you communicate with your customers. You should celebrate their successes. And what I mean by that is, you know, you can reach out to your community, the 1,000 Twitter followers you have and the 3,000 that you have on the Facebook, and you can say to them, you know, one of the things I deeply believe is that your compass in life should not be some sort of outside prescription, but rather your passion or purpose. Has anyone had this experience? I would love for you to share that with me. And then you ask them to do a quick 2 or 3 minute video about, you know, some seminal moment that allowed them to reorientate their lives or to unlock more meaning and purpose for themselves. And, you know, you can create a page on your website, the landing page for your book, where there's a mosaic, like tiles of sort of 20 or 30 success stories of people. And that serves as social proof that what you're talking about really has meaning in people's lives. So this is another way to be co-creative, to I'll give you a concrete example of how not only efficient but cost-effective this can be. You know, Coca-Cola did a project called Expedition 206, and they sent a team of 6 ambassadors all around the world, and all they wanted them to do was to go up to people and videotape them as to what happiness means for them. So if their campaign is open happiness, and why did they do that? It's because suddenly they shifted the responsibility from themselves to their customers to create the content that promotes their brand. And in the same way, you can reach out to your customers or your, you know, community on Twitter and Facebook and say, I would love to hear from you. And those things will be social proof that can sit on your page. And then you can retweet those, and obviously they would want to share those out there themselves. And so, you know, sample chapter, reaching out to influencers, having your own blog, doing a video series, asking people to create their own social proof videos. You know, these are all some of the different strategies. And I think there's about a dozen strategies that, you know, any first-time author needs to get out there to launch their book. So Does that help?
Absolutely, yes. You know, several of these I've kind of already have on my list of things that I need to do, and I'm putting pieces together, but you've kind of crystallized them for me to kind of connect them better than I had done before.
Yeah, I cannot stress enough that I did something wrong. I'll let me confess. Hand on my heart. I did something wrong. I didn't approach being an author and trainer, speaker, consultant as a business. I approached it as a brand. Why? Because I'm a brand guy. So I got the brand right with We First and have had to back out of that to build my business because I wasn't thinking about the business. I was thinking about the storytelling and the messaging. What I see more often than not is people will come along to me and say, oh, you've got this wonderful brand and so on, but I put my hand up and say, well, I didn't have a great business because I hadn't. That's not where my strength or skill set is. And what you see instead, though, is a lot of people will build out independent parts of their brand. They'll have three different books. They'll have talked to a certain audience on Twitter in a certain way and a certain audience on Facebook a different way, and they'll have certain different relationships in the real world. Instead of getting those all synthesized into one singular message. And this is so important today because you can imagine there is so much competition for people's attention that if you go out to them and say, I'm this, I'm that, I'm this, I'm that, you'll just confuse them and they won't know how to talk about you. So you need to ring the same bell over and over again. And that same bell is that keystone I'm talking about. What is it? Is it on purpose? Is it living inside out? Is it, what is that thing? And then all of these strategies you do have only one job, which is to reinforce that message and bring it to life in different ways. And, for example, Guy Kawasaki launched a book in Enchantment. And so all he did to do his book launch, one of the many strategies he used, was he did a photo competition on his Facebook page. And he asked people to find out, to share what they found enchanting. And very simple, just share a photograph. And he had thousands of entries of people sharing their photography because they wanted to share an image that they loved. But that was community engagement. Or Beth Cantor, who's a wonderful leader in the nonprofit space, all she asked her people, her community to do was, when you get your copy, would you take a photo and post it on my page showing that you got a copy of the book? And that became, so people would post it, and then they'd have Beth Cantor, you know, they'd put her name in there as well, so it appeared on her page, and then suddenly by doing that, lots more people see it. So these are all very, very simple strategies, but they leverage the connective tissue between this technology to ring the same bell over and over again. With Beth Cantor, it was all about networking. So this showed networking. With Guy Kawasaki, it was all about enchantment. So the photographs were all about what was enchanting to people. So, and you've got that message. So what other questions do you have?
It just came to me a second ago, and I've kind of lost it as I was listening to you about enchantment.
Well, that's okay. I'll share a little bit more.
It might come back to me, but just 2 seconds.
Serena, what is the brand that you're planning on using for the book launch?
What is the brand that I'm using? I'm sorry?
Yes, what is the brand? We talked about this last week. What's the domain name, the brand?
Right. What I changed from Serena Says, that's going to happen soon, but it's called Life Balance Inc. is the website name, and Life Balance is the concept that I will transfer from Serena Says. And
it
encompasses much larger. It addresses your first question or your first comment about my website saying that Serena Says is about me, which you're absolutely right. I was only thinking in terms of the different areas. Being a social psychologist, I have a lot of different areas, sub-segments of human interaction that I could talk about. So I did not really want to have my website say work-life balance because that would be narrowing substantially my areas of expertise and things that I can go into. So I thought Serena Says would actually encompass a much larger one. But talking to you as well as talking to Gina and Rhonda and everybody else in our mastermind group, I realized that that's still narrow. That's, and not only is it narrow, but it's about me. And like you said, I very firmly believe in making it their brand. I'm simply a promoter and a facilitator for their ideas and their problems and their issues, but I'm not the one things should be concentrating on. So,
no, exactly.
You know, get back to that, yes. So that will be modified pretty soon.
Right, so life balance. And you know, it's so instructive in so many different ways. I think the only reason that a lot of people, and myself, my company used to be called Mannering Creative, and then I saw the shift in the marketplace, and I changed it to We First. The only reason we've done that was because that worked in the past. When we're in the world of traditional media, which was all broadcast, you know, the television, print, and radio just talked at people, and you couldn't talk back because they didn't have social media, that made a lot of sense. But now we needed to shift, because it's a dialogue that's going on, and our customers want to be engaged with us. And I cannot stress enough that if you're listening to what we're talking about and thinking, well, this all sounds very nice and well-intended, please don't make that mistake. It does have that effect, but we're actually talking about what's driving the marketplace today. If you are a solopreneur or a startup or a stay-at-home business, and you want to grow and leverage these relatively cost-effective tools like social media, like smartphones and so on, and all the trends around mobile payments and all these things to generate the passive, scalable income that we all want, the most effective way to do that is to connect emotionally with people, because in a world of virtual technologies, you don't see the other person, yet you still need an emotional connection. So you need to build that emotional connection into your messaging to inspire them, A, to connect with you, and B, to share it with others. And the big mistake that most solopreneurs make is that they talk about themselves as a brand, as a hangover from the traditional marketing days, or they don't connect emotionally in a community-facing way with their customers, and therefore they never unlock the power of social media to really build their business with them. And so this is not just well-intendedness. This is what's driving the marketplace as a function of who the customer is and what technology they have in their hand. Would anything you'd add to that, Gina?
No, I think it's a great way to say it, Simon.
Absolutely. Yeah. If we have just 2 seconds, I did remember what I was going to ask about, and that is today there's such a bad feeling about giving to charities, because so many of these people you hear in the news, they abuse the, you know, collect funds under the rubric of charity and this and that cause, and then they're using it for personal gain, and there's a level of cynicism about it. And to show transparency that you talk about, as well as something that I'm very careful about and conscious of, was thinking creating a web page that shows how continuously the funds are increasing, so kind of a barometer as a way to make, and then see after, they can look at it when they, before they purchase the book and right after they purchase the book, the thing will go up a little bit, so they can say, oh, good, I know now that, you know, some visual way of communicating to them that they have made a difference and their purchase has added to the kitty, so to speak, to the, you know, till. That was one of the things I was thinking of, and I wondered what you thought about that. That was my question, and I finally
got
it before we've done.
It's so critical. I mean, there's so many different strategies out there, and you're right. I mean, we just saw it recently with, you know, the Sandy, Hurricane Sandy and so on. It was just, you know, fake websites set up to get money out of people who are trying to, from their best place, donate and so on. There's different strategies. One is full transparency. So I'll give you a concrete example. Charity Water is a nonprofit that has limited funds, but what they use is GPS technology from Google Maps to actually allow you to see the wells that are being dug with the donation that you made. So you can actually see the map. So what would that look like for us? If somebody bought a book and $2.60 of that book went to a cause, you could actually, you know, see the pictures of the kids that are benefiting from the contribution, if the contribution went to kids. or you could see a videotape from the director of the cancer or heart disease facility that received the funds, or you could get you could have a wall of portraits of patients that are benefiting from those contributions. The other thing that some people are doing is that they're doing something which is very smart. For example, when you support a large if you support a cancer or heart research facility, when you actually make a contribution to that facility is very grateful, and they would like to share your contribution and share what you're doing with the community of that nonprofit. So what is a very smart way of building your business is to support a cause and then work with that cause to get them to share the message of your book with that community. For example, let's say a large nonprofit, a heart disease nonprofit, has a community of 5,000 people. That's not unusual. You would actually work out with them a special discount, for example, for everyone who's a member of that nonprofit to buy a copy of your book, or even better yet, a special discount if they buy two copies and they give one to another. So you not only get to make a contribution and you use transparency to show how meaningful that is and how authentic that contribution is, but you then work with that nonprofit to get scale to your community very quickly. And I didn't do this consciously, but I found, you know, what we first does with our seminars and our products is that every time someone buys a ticket to our seminar or someone buys the Social Branding Blueprint training program, they get an extra ticket to the seminar or an extra copy of the program to give to a nonprofit. And that's because contribution is a very big part of the message. But what we found was that opened the door to all these communities that were built around nonprofits because they're people who care about the same things. So by serving your transparency, you also serve yourself because you open the door to that nonprofit community. Does that make sense?
Absolutely. Yeah.
And
totally.
We are out of time, guys.
Amazing.
Simon, thank you. Thank you so much for being here today. We really appreciated it. And I want to let our listeners know about Simon's new course called Social Branding Blueprint that is available right now at wefirstbranding.com. And I asked Simon to do something a little special for our listeners. So if you use the coupon code, all capital letters, ASKGGG, you will get a nice discount on the Social Branding Blueprint at wefirstbranding.com, coupon code ASKGGG.
So just wefirstblueprint.com, not branding.
Wefirstblueprint. Thank you, Simon.
That's okay.
I'll make sure that that's in the show notes if it's not there already.
That's okay. But, yeah, everything that we've been talking about today, from brand definition all the way to community building to leveraging social and mobile technologies to help us as small entrepreneurs unlock the power of these technologies to build our businesses and to really give us the scale and the passive income we want. It's all there. It's all mapped and laid out for you from all my experience of having done it myself and working with a lot of the big successful brands out there. So if you go to wefirstblueprint.com and just put in the special code ASKGGG, there's an enormous discount we're giving just to Gene and Rhonda, their community, as a special thank you. So this is something that we're doing for the launch of it that came out in the last week, and it's only it's through to only a couple of days, like 48 hours left for this because it was a launch thing. So if you would like to really use these social technologies to build your brand and to really inspire each of your customers to bring two or three or four more customers to your business so you can rapidly grow, I would strongly recommend you going to wefirstblueprint.com and just enter the code and you'll get an enormous discount. So we're just happy to provide that.
Thank you so much. Everybody's saying the same thing. Thank you, Simon. This is Serena. I really, really appreciate the incredible help you've given me this whole hour. Thank you
so much.
From my heart.
Yeah, you're welcome. And, you know, it's so wonderful just to be working with other like-minded people. I'm going to put my hand up and take a risk here and say that if enough of us people get together who are putting our hearts and minds and expertise behind what we care about, as much negative as that there is out there in the world, we can make a difference. Things can get better. And I refuse to throw up my hands and get cynical. There are just too many good people out there, and it's amazing what we can do. And, you know, sometimes the only thing that's stopping an entrepreneur from really exploding is just the marketing expertise, because they just don't have the budget or insights into that. And so we first thought, listen, that's not fair. They shouldn't be penalized for it. Let's take all the best practices, put it all together, and get that in the hands of the right people. So that's why it's there.
Wonderful. Well, thank you so much again. And Rhonda and I will be back next week for another episode of Relationship Marketing 101 here on Blog Talk Radio. Have a great week, everybody.
Be well.
Bye-bye. Thank you.
Come back next week for Relationship Marketing 101. Join us at Directions University, www.directionsu.com, for passion-powered results.